We are now going to look back at this past week's reactions and debate in the aftermath of the mass shootings in El Paso and Dayton. Seems like for every action that's been proposed, there's been an equal and opposite reaction called for, and that doesn't sound like a high potential for progress, does it? Well, one reality is that the Second Amendment is carved in stone, unless, of course, an amendment is passed by two-thirds of the Congress and three-fourths of the states go along with it. That being said, how do we as a nation address the deadly combination of access to guns and the rise of white nationalism, Antifa, and other hate and terrorist groups? My next guest joins us to explore this element. She is the president of Brady United, Chris Brown. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And the website to learn more about the work of Brady is bradyunited.org. I was going to start this off by saying, here we go again, but now in the aftermath of the, well, actually three most recent shootings with the Garlic Festival in Gilroy, California, there's been at least the superficial change in stand on this issue by the president, Mitch McConnell, and others. There's also now, by their own hand, a much more weakened NRA. Is this maybe the best time we've seen in recent years for change to finally be more than just talk?
Well, I think the pressure that has been building for some time is coming to a crescendo. And, you know, we've seen this movie before after Parkland with Donald Trump sitting down with the survivors and family members who've lost loved ones, and then meeting with members of Congress and talking about things like extreme risk laws, the need to expand the Brady background check system, even doing an exchange with Dianne Feinstein, expressing surprise about the ready availability of assault-style weapons, indicating we should do more. And then he sat down with the NRA and completely reversed course. So here's my sort of agenda. If President Trump wants any of these things, and he tweeted that he does, he mentioned extreme risk laws in his speech following the horror of El Paso and Dayton, then he has the ability to call Mitch McConnell on the phone, tell Mitch McConnell to bring the Senate back from recess, and vote on measures that have already passed the House of Representatives. If he fails to do that, then this is just so much words.
And I said to Ms. Brown before we got on the air, too, if only for the sheer optics, call the Congress back into session. At least that shows that there's at least a concern and an effort of caring in the aftermath. But the failure to do that does leave a bit desired. Although I did see, I think it was a Reuters report, apparently President Trump is asking for research to be done about what executive orders he can issue regarding gun control and background checks. So that might be a new avenue. Maybe he's you know, I'm reading into this maybe, but perhaps he's going to let Congress fall on their butt so that he can succeed.
Well, it's possible. You know, there's precedent for it before. I would just alert your readers to an interesting fact. One of the things that President Trump referenced in his speech was, well, this is really not a gun problem. It's more a video game problem. It's a mental health issue, right? And just to note, the United States does not experience any more mental health illness than any other industrialized country. We have a lot more gun violence. Nor do we have more video games than any other country in the world. There's a global market for it. And so ultimately, we have to look at the issue of guns. But if you accept his premise that this is really about mental health, I'd like to note that within the first 60 days of his administration, he reversed an executive order issued by President Obama, asking the Social Security Administration to put the names in of anyone who'd been adjudicated mentally ill by the Social Security Administration. President Trump reversed that rule at the behest of the NRA.
I was just going to say that was another hammerlock by the NRA, and albeit the early days of the Trump administration. But there was a conflict that day when he did his address to the nation that Saturday, because he had tweeted earlier that same morning a reference to we need to seek greater gun control laws. So somewhere between point A and point B, either, well, he was reading off of the teleprompter. That was obvious. Either his handlers didn't want him to go that way, or they didn't want him to go that way yet. It was supposed to be a speech of sympathy versus policy. I'm playing devil's advocate here.
Yeah, I mean, look, ultimately, the thing that's frustrating about that is we as American citizens who are not elected officials can speak, I suppose, in broad platitudes about what we want. It's different when you're the president or you're a sitting member of the Senate. You're elected and given power by the people to take action. So the fact that he continues to speak in platitudes as if he doesn't have the power to ask Mitch McConnell to have a vote on S-42. There's a bill. It has a name. If he wants to accomplish these things, then he should be specific rather than just speaking in platitudes so that he can walk away and pretend that he was consoling or helpful to people when, in fact, he's not. He's not a rabbi. He's not a priest. He's the president of the United States. Thoughts and prayers aren't good enough. We need votes and laws.
Oh, Chris Brown, who's the president of Brady Organization, BradyUnited.org, their website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. Again, turning the light on Congress, who really is, when you look at the legislation, is really the front line. I mean, the president could do executive orders, but then people will argue against those, saying that's tyranny. It's Congress and legislation who have to step up. And the House has done their job with H.R. 8, H.R. 1112. Various states, 14 states in the country, have done their job with red flag laws. It's just a matter of getting the Senate to get in line with the House and the Congress to get in line with what's been shown to be, to some degree, effective laws in the 14 states, including New Jersey, with the red flag laws to make it a more national uniform policy on that issue.
I completely agree. And, of course, every court that has ever looked at these proposals that we're talking about has held them entirely consistent with the Second Amendment. So let's not fall for the line that some people push that somehow this is infringing on their constitutional rights. It's not. The Second Amendment has not been interpreted, even by Justice Scalia, as being unlimited in its approach. And the reality is, let's face it, we have an epidemic of gun violence. We're losing 40,000 Americans a year to gun violence, over 80,000 more a year who are injured and have lifelong consequences as a result of that. We have to do something. And frankly, the time is too late. We've had mass shooting after mass shooting after mass shooting, not to mention the everyday gun violence that's plaguing far too many communities across this country, particularly black and brown communities. It's an imperative that we address the issue. And I think that there is a building momentum here. Let's keep in mind that in 2018, we elected the first gun violence prevention majority in history in Congress. That is a very, very big deal, and that's why we've gotten the measures passed that have been passed. We need the Senate to do its job, and we need to examine the filibuster rule, quite frankly. I think these bills deserve a simple majority vote in the United States Senate.
And referencing back to what Ms. Brown said, too, this isn't strictly a mental health or a white supremacist issue, because gun violence, we've seen white supremacists, separatists, illegal immigrants. The Kate Steinle story springs to mind. It's just the gun violence is the issue. That what triggers it, no pun intended, is something for the additional steps to be taken. But you have to start somewhere, and you start with where, you know, you go to the source of the problem, and that is the loopholes. I mean, for example, I mean, this was a tired old joke, but you really don't want to sell a gun to someone who comes running into your store and slams $500 on the table and expressly, excitedly says, "I need a gun now." That's sort of a red flag right there.
It is. And, you know, the sad thing is there are gun dealers all across this country. And I want people to keep in mind, we have more gun dealers in this country than we have Starbucks and McDonald's combined. There are a huge number of gun dealers. And the vast majority of them would not sell to an individual in that kind of circumstance. They do the right thing. They train their employees. They really go out of their way, understanding they are the last defense between an innocent person and a dangerous person weaponized. Ultimately, though, we have about 5% of gun dealers in this country that are responsible for 90% of crime guns. Not only are they looking the other way, they're flagrantly violating the law. And Congress has looked the other way because they stopped ATF, another NRA goodie, from telling the American public, because the ATF has the data, who those gun dealers are, so that we can shut them down or reform them. That needs to change, too. We need open access to this kind of information so that we can protect lives.
It's an issue of responsibility on that side, as well as for gun owners to secure a gun in their home. And I would eagerly say that if you are failing to secure your gun in a home and it's used in a crime, then, quite frankly, you should be charged as an accessory in whatever that action is, whether it be murder, attempted murder, homicide, or even a simple robbery, because you failed to secure that gun that was used in a criminal act.
I think it's a really important point. Look, 8 kids a day are killed or injured with a gun in their own home. That's called family fire. It's entirely preventable. We have to reinstitute and really celebrate something that was fundamental to the notion of gun ownership for a very long time, which is responsibility. The NRA would like to assume that ownership of a gun is a risk-free transaction. Unfortunately, it's not. And what it takes is ensuring that the gun is secured, and that means unloaded, locked, inaccessible to people at risk in your home, and that includes children, with ammunition stored and locked separately.
Now, the problem is, how do you push, and there's polarizing elements on both sides of this debate. I've seen people saying that there's no such thing as too many guns, and you have another side saying there's no such thing as a responsible gun owner. How do you push the polarizing elements of this debate out of the way so something can get done?
Well, the same way we've accomplished anything worth accomplishing ever in this country, where there's never been 100% consensus, but this is pretty close to it. The background check expansion bill, for example, that passed the House of Representatives H.R. 8 and that is now sitting, growing mothballs on McConnell's desk, S-42, 97% of Americans support that provision. And why is that? Well, it's pretty common sense. The Brady background check system says this: a background check must be done before a federally licensed firearms dealer sells a gun. Seems to make a lot of sense, right? Well, the problem is that law was put into effect a quarter century ago when the internet wasn't a thing and gun shows weren't big business. They are today, and private sellers aren't technically subject to the Brady law. So what H.R. 8 says is they are. They're subject to it. They have to do background checks too. S-42 says the exact same thing. It's pretty common sense. The idea that any member of Congress is opposed to this is shocking and upsetting, and the only reason they are is not because their constituents are telling them not to, it's because the gun industry doesn't want them to. And make no mistake, the reason why is more guns, even in criminal hands, means more profit to the gun industry. They are literally profiting off of death. And so I want everyone listening to understand, those are the stakes we're talking about here with this legislation.
And regarding the legislation that has passed the House on the political party breakdown, almost 60% of Republican voters support both the bills as well. So it is not a one-sided issue. And those numbers on the right in approval are growing. And no doubt the next time they do a survey and a poll on this issue, they'll easily top 60% would be my prediction. Learn more about the work of Brady United, BradyUnited.org. We've been talking with the president, Chris Brown. Chris, thanks so much for your insight in this issue. And for the clarification that you give, because there's too many extremes on the side that try to over talk the rational and the wise, and you help get those voices out of the way so progress can indeed be made. Thank you for doing that, too.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.